Charlie Wolf Smoke, an Indigenous activist and organizer in Regina, Saskatchewan, of Mohawk and Lakota heritage, was called into a meeting with officials of Citizenship and Immigration Canada on Thursday, October 10th, to, quote, review his immigration status in Canada. Wolf has made it clear that he is an Indigenous person, not a Canadian, and that he will not accept any colonial government's authority over him and his community. His strong and principled stance of being pre-Canadian has led the Canadian authorities to continually terrorize him and his family. For October 10th, Wolf was ordered by Immigration Canada to produce a Canadian passport or immigration papers to prove to the Canadian government that he has the right to be in Canada. This is nothing short of the Canadian government once again asserting its colonial will against Indigenous people. Last year, Wolf was arrested in front of his family at his home by federal immigration officials in an attempt to deport Wolf to the United States on the grounds that he was a U.S. visitor working, quote, illegally at a Regina high school. Being that Wolf does not recognize the authority of either the Canadian or American state to dictate to him, his family, or his community policies which are effectively a continuation of 500 years of genocide perpetuated against Indigenous peoples by the states of the Americas. Wolf is effectively living day to day with the knowledge that Canadian immigration authorities are going to attempt to lock him up, taking him away from his family in an attempt to break his commendable stance of non-recognition of the authority of either the Canadian or American states over the Indigenous people of the Americas. We spoke to Wolf Smoke about his current situation. Wolf, I guess first off, could you explain what happened today at the Citizenship and Immigration Canada offices in Regina?
Okay, when I get there, I had actually a longer meeting with the media on the street outside than I actually did inside with immigration. When I finally got into immigration office with Darcy Warner and Joel Luzinski, I immediately gave them the deportation order that I served on Luzinski, Ron Smith, Al Johns, and Al Molander, demanding that they leave my country as a result of their racist, genocidal practices. And then Sue Drange, who came in as a community representative, there was a crowd of people outside along with the media, and they would only allow one person inside with me. She immediately got into, she brought up the Jay Treaty, she brought up inherent Indigenous rights and the fact that immigration is in violation of the Canadian Constitution, and their attacks on me and other Indigenous peoples like Robert Watt in B.C., and then my friend with a long name at Burnt Church, and other Indigenous people who for this past century they have been attacking quietly until my case. We basically didn't get anywhere. It was a very short meeting. I guess you could say that we both sides refused to comply with the other one. They didn't want to address any of the issues that either I or my friend brought up. They got upset, and then Darcy Warner stood up and said, okay, then fine, this meeting's over with, and he stormed out of the room. He turned around and came back into the room to say a few more things, but a couple of times he got upset and stormed out.
And when you speak about issues, what exact issues were they not listening to?
Well, in my mind, the number one issue, and of course I would have fainted if they would have complied with it, but the number one issue still for me was my deportation order on them. And while I didn't by any stretch of the imagination expect them to honor that, it was still a statement that I'm putting forth to them that the colony of Canada is going to have to address in one way or another very soon that the Indigenous people are the legal authority on this land. There was precedent set, as I told them before, 500 years ago when the first wave of immigrants came over to my land. We levied no taxes against these people. There were no constraints, no conditions held against them. They were all welcome here. And that is the actual law of this land. Any law that has come since then does not supersede that law. And in Canadian courts, legal precedent is a binding matter. And so now they, as far as I'm concerned, are bound by the precedent that was set 510 years ago when they first came here. So now for them to illegally form an immigration department and to use that department to manipulate and mistreat and abuse other people who wish to immigrate here from whatever country at a time later than the original people, that's ridiculous. And then for them to use that immigration department, like in the case of Levi General in the 1920s or myself today, to use their so-called Immigration Act to attack indigenous people, to even violate Section 35 of their own Canadian Constitution, and also to violate various international documents, mainly the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the UN's Convention on the Rights of the Child, to just ignore their own law, international law, inherent indigenous rights, even the treaties that they signed with our people, all of these things, they can't do that. And when you bring it up to them, even of all things, you would expect them to adhere to the Canadian Constitution. Anyone who has a close friendship with the United States knows that they can laugh at world court and international law, and every colonial government by design ignores inherent indigenous rights. But you would at least expect these immigration officials to abide by their own Canadian Constitution, yet they're violating that in this case. They have to be held accountable for their actions.
An immigration official in the Regina Citizenship and Immigration Offices today stated that the only authority which was able to order deportation notices was Citizenship and Immigration Canada within the boundaries of this, quote, nation. So what exactly do you say to that? You drafted up a deportation notice also to Jean Chrétien and Minister of Immigration Denis Coderre.
Right. First of all, the person that you spoke with here in Regina, Al Molander, is you meet with him one time, and it's clear that the guy is, very much a bigot. And so, of course, I mean, this is actually his response to you was really mellow compared to previous responses he has given to media representatives in the past. With Chrétien and Coderre, what I did was, and I haven't put their name on a deportation order yet, but what I did was I CC'd a copy of the deportation order that I served on the four CIC agents here in Regina. And basically, to paraphrase, what I told Chrétien and Coderre was that I was simply making them aware of a legal deportation order and quite possibly, the first actual legal deportation order that has ever been served in this hemisphere, and I, told them the reasons that I think are pretty clear on there, and I said that in the spirit of peace and forgiveness, because we, as indigenous people, we can't continually attack the white men the way that they continually attack us, because then anyone with half a brain knows this is how situations escalate. This is why these cycles of violence and genocide continue. So with that motivation in my heart, I said, in the spirit of peace and forgiveness, I will offer both of you graciously 7 days to show to me some type of effort, a serious effort, not lip service, to reverse the cycle of racism and the unjust society that they have, both Jean Chrétien and Denis Coderre, contributed to so greatly in this land. And if either one of them is man enough to accept that challenge and to show that they want to exhibit, peace and goodwill towards man and acknowledge that the indigenous people are the true authority on this land, then from there, then our society as a whole will progress. But if they refuse, in which I expect both of them to ignore it, then in 7 days' time, then I will draft up another deportation letter, and this one will be for Jean Chrétien and Denis Coderre to get the hell out of my country.
With a potential deportation to the United States, as mentioned by Mr. Molander, that has been attempted before in your case. What would that mean both for your situation in the United States with citizenship and also your situation in Canada, but also most importantly, what would that mean for you and your family?
Well, for my family, that's much more stress for my family, for my children. And as far as citizenship, it wouldn't in any way change the fact that I am an indigenous citizen of this land and a Lakota national. You know, what will happen if they take me down there? Exactly as I told them before, maybe this time they will have cut a deal under the table with the Americans so that they'll let me through. The last time, the reason it failed is because Agent Ron Smith, who's one of the four people that I served a notice on today, when he took me down there, he photocopied a page and he typed my name at the top, put his signature at the bottom. And he said, this is proof that Smoke was born in the States. And I pointed out to the U.S. immigration official, look at the signature on the bottom of the page and look at this guy's ID. He was too damn stupid to have someone else in his office sign this paper instead of himself. And that's why they weren't able to deport me last time. Now, if they go so far as to take me to the border again, then immediately what that means is that already prior to that point, they have cut a deal with the Americans so that the Americans will let me through because they won't embarrass themselves. Even as stupid as these immigration officials are, they're not that dumb. They won't, willingly embarrass themselves like that again. So if they can't do that, then what they'll do is they'll arrest me and they'll keep me in prison, which, as I've said before, as soon as I do that, because I can't fight them straight out. You know, I don't have an army up here. The only tool I have against them is, as far as I see it, is a hunger strike. And so as soon as they arrest me, I'll immediately go on a hunger strike. And then the press won't be able to ignore that for too long. They won't be able to shade it the way that they've been able to shade other issues and other statements that I've made. And then maybe then Chan and Coderre and the rest of this colony will be forced to deal with the illegitimacy of their Cold War against me and my family.
Can you describe a little bit the attempted deportation which happened earlier this year?
Okay, it was the first week of January. They have had a tap on my phone for a year and a half now, so they knew that I was going to be leaving in about an hour and a half. So they waited about a little more than a block down from my house, and they parked and waited for me. When I came outside, they drove up, put handcuffs on me. I told them that, well, I'm going to get my jacket and say goodbye to my babies before I leave. They said, well, I'll just make it quick. Went inside. Immediately they changed their mind. No, we're going to go now. And I said, well, no, I said, my children are scared. I'm going to talk to them first. Then there was an altercation whereby I had to physically, even though I was handcuffed behind my back, I had to remove these two monkeys from my back. After I did that, you know, then I kissed my children. I told them what was going on. I got my coat from my wife, and I said, okay, let's go now. They held me in jail. They waited till the next day. They took me to the border. And then, as I just said, they tried for quite a while, about an hour and a half, I guess, to convince Americans to take me. When they wouldn't, they said, okay. They pulled a car around the back, snuck me out the back door to avoid the media, took off, stopped at the Canadian side, asked Canada Customs to delay the media for at least half hour to give them a head start. And as fast as they're driving, they didn't need much of a head start because I don't think the news vans would travel as fast as that car. Took me back to the RCMP barracks, kept me in there, supposed to have no contact with anyone. All of a sudden, they showed up. They transferred me to Regina Correctional Center, put me in maximum security under lockdown. Again, no contact with anybody. But I got word out to my wife and then indirectly to the media that I had been transferred and that at that time I was beginning a hunger strike. The next day, there was a rally in front of the offices. It was a detention hearing. They lied. They took arrests that I had, you know, my jail record from my childhood, and they changed the dates on these charges to make it seem as if these charges that actually went back about 20 years that had been accumulated just in these past 3 years. They took, because my, like any, you know, indigenous person, I have an indigenous name, and like most indigenous people, I also have an anglicized name. You know, Charlie Smoke is my anglicized name. Most people refer to me as Wolf because my real name is Shukmanitutanka Ishnalanajin, which means wolf standing alone in English. So what they did was they said he uses a number of aliases, Charlie Wolf, Wolf Smoke, sometimes just Wolf, all of these things to discredit me, to get the adjudicator to rule that they could keep me in jail indefinitely. But because of the pressure of the media and the people, about 50 people that were standing outside in the cold for well over an hour before this even began, the adjudicator had to release me. Everything has been political. There hasn't been one single instance of legality since June 19th, 2001 in this case. Everything has been totally, absolutely political. I was released that time in June. I was arrested again in February. And when I told the media, hey, look, I've been to court on these charges before. This is double jeopardy. CBC Radio phoned me and said, hey, you might want to know that the police are calling us all back to retake the interview that we filmed this morning. And then they said, oh, he was arrested on this and failure to appear, even though I wasn't arrested on failure to appear, but they had to cover up their tracks because they, because this was, you know, double jeopardy, this arrest. And then the harassment, you know, got stepped up after that, and it's been continual. And I think that they're trying to prevent me from going to Montreal because I know that like yourself, Harsha, the friends, the new friends that I have in Montreal are very strong and very politically aware, and they don't want me to get into that area where there are strong indigenous people who understand what the word sovereignty means, and also other organizations like people connected with No One Is Illegal and Open the Borders, who from other areas who understand what solidarity and sovereignty is, and who see the illegality and the immoral attitudes in these immigration policies.
What do you expect to happen to yourself in the coming weeks?
I expect to be arrested probably in the middle of the night, so that it won't be a time that I would be already sitting in front of my computer or the telephone or something. And, of course, a time when I wouldn't be able to get the media or friends here right away. They'll put me in jail. They'll probably shuffle me around like they did last time to try and hide me from my friends and my family. And they'll probably try to find a jail or a prison that has jailers in there who aren't sympathetic to me, because even as racist don't get me wrong. Now, the Regina City Police and the jailers here have shown, you know, real sympathy towards me and have been really cool about things. Not all of them, but there have been some. But they will find a place, you know, where they can put me away in a cage somewhere, and they don't have to worry about some jailer having a conscience or any political awareness, and they'll hide me. Like that, they might try to deport me, and then when I walk back across the border, then they'll use that as an example. They said, "You see, we were lenient with him. Look, we gave him a year and a half, and we tried everything, you know, and we have no choice now because he's proven that we have to keep him locked up. I mean, look what a danger he is to our fragile sense of control over another people's land."
One final question would be the importance of people standing, as you mentioned before, in solidarity with Indigenous peoples, also in respect to this case, your case in particular, and ongoing genocide and colonialism.
Well, that's absolutely true, and you see that it is happening. And there are a couple of different Indigenous prophecies even that talk about this time and what's going to happen. There's a movement underfoot. People are coming together. People, even ordinary people who have never been involved in politics before, are saying, how can this be happening in this world today? You know, it doesn't make sense. So you hear the same story over and over again. If you look at Iraq, the Middle East, you know, there's something just isn't right here. And in South America and Mexico and the Philippines and Afghanistan, everywhere that you look, and then people are starting to realize all of a sudden, hey, we've been looking at the Middle East and Afghanistan, at the atrocities that Uncle Sam and his friends have been committing there. How is it that we missed what's been going on to the Indian people right here in Americas? All of this is starting to come out, and so people are coming together. That's why the colony is so damn scared, because their own people are questioning them, and the oppressed peoples, people of color, people like myself, people that are oppressed for whatever reason, for their religion, for their sexual preference, the color of their skin, their accent, you know, whatever reason, all of these groups are coming together. And then the more that we join together, the stronger we're going to be. Even the wives and the daughters of these politicians should be on our side, because I guarantee you that not a single goddamn woman, I don't care how white she is in this country, is considered an equal by people like Denis Coderre and Jean Chrétien. They put their token women up there, but you look in any workplace or any school environment, anywhere, even inside of one of these politicians' houses, and you know that these white women are not treated equal to the white men. So they should also be on our side. And then when we come together, it's not like we're going to kill all the rich white people. All we're going to do is that we're going to work hard together to establish some sense of peace for possibly the first time in this world.
That was an interview with Wolf Smoke, an Indigenous activist and organizer based in Regina, Saskatchewan, currently at battle with Immigration Canada over the Canadian and American states' non-legitimacy in their continuous efforts to jail, deport, and harass Wolf due to his principled stance of being pre-Canadian. If you'd like to get more information about Wolf Smoke's case, visit his website at www.charlie_smoke.tripod.com. You can call Joe Lisinski, the immigration official responsible for Wolf's harassment, at area code 306-780-6302. Joe Lisinski of Citizenship and Immigration Canada at 1817 Hamilton Street, Regina, Saskatchewan, S4P6P6. Call Denis Coderre, Federal Immigration Minister, at his Ottawa office at area code 613-995-6108, at his Montreal office at 514-323-1212, by fax 613-946-8529, Ottawa office 613-995-9755. By email, minister@cic.gc.ca. This report was produced for CKUT Radio in Montreal by Stéphane Christophe.